The future of some 36,000 state government employees lies in part with the Illinois Labor Relations Board. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky talks with Melissa Molinsky, the director of the board, and explains why she's playing a central role these days.
The union that represents most state workers, AFSCME, and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's administration, had been at the bargaining table for about a year when, last week, Rauner announced he'd had enough. He says there's no point to further talks. They're at an impasse, but neither side can make that choice unilaterally, so Rauner's filed a charge with the labor board asking it to decide. If Rauner wins, AFSCME would pretty much have to take the governor's last best offer for wages, health care benefits, and the like, a deal AFSCME considers a raw one. That could lead its members to strike. There's a lot to watch going forward, but first things first, what does the State Labor Relations Board do? Well, it takes up charges filed by public employers, as well as labor organizations and public employees, who think that the state labor law has been violated. Here's Molinsky.
It is certainly not unusual for us to receive a charge by either a union or an employer claiming that one side or the other has bargained in bad faith, or, for example, that one side has declared an impasse when there really is no legitimate impasse. So, you know, those types of cases, you know, in and of themselves are not necessarily unusual.
But a charge between AFSCME and Illinois Central Management Services over an impasse in negotiations?
As far as I know, this is probably the first charge we've ever received from these parties along those lines.
Impasse, that is a word that if I were to look it up, and Merriam-Webster has one definition, but when it comes to labor law and the cases that we're discussing now, that has a different connotation. Can you explain?
Oh, sure. Under the Illinois Public Labor Relations Act, employers and public employers and the unions that represent public employees are required to bargain in good faith and to reach, and to attempt to reach a collective bargaining agreement. Impasse is basically used when the parties have, despite their best efforts, despite bargaining in good faith, have come to a point where they're just not able to reach an agreement. And so, like I said, the question that sometimes comes before us in the form of an unfair labor practice charge is one side claiming that the other side has declared impasse unilaterally and that there isn't really a legitimate impasse. You know, a legitimate impasse, again, is when both parties have, you know, bargained in good faith and just were unable to reach an agreement. The differences between them are just too great.
That's what Rauner is alleging. Knowing that Molinsky wouldn't be able to speak to the specifics of this particular case, I asked her, in general terms, what would you be looking for in this type of situation?
Just sort of depends on the theory of the case. You know, a lot of times we'll have, you know, for example, a labor organization might file a charge and say, the employer is refusing to meet with us anymore, they've declared impasse, and there's really not an impasse. So, you know, in that type of case, you know, the question, again, is always going to come down to, is there a legitimate impasse? Have the parties been acting in good faith? You know, we look at the totality of the circumstances. It is a very fact-intensive inquiry to determine whether the parties have, in fact, bargaining good faith. You know, have they been meeting on a regular basis? Have they been exchanging proposals? You know, is there evidence that they have, you know, really been working towards an agreement, but, you know, perhaps just unable to reach one?
Time to drill into the details. What is the process now that you have the paperwork?
The process when an unfair labor practice charge is filed is that it is immediately assigned to one of our investigators, and it goes through an investigation stage. And at that point, the investigator will reach out to both parties, request position statements, any evidence, you know, any documents that they want to submit to support their position or to support their side. And then ultimately, at the conclusion of the investigation, I, as the executive director, will have to make a decision as to whether the charge raises a question of law or fact that warrants a hearing. So, you know, it is not our role during the investigation stage to make the ultimate determination as to whether the law has been violated or, you know, whether there's impasse. We are just simply looking to see whether there's a question here, whether this charge raises a question that warrants a hearing. And if I believe that it does warrant a hearing, I will issue a complaint for hearing. It would be assigned to an administrative law judge, and the administrative law judge would hold an administrative hearing. And, you know, just sort of like you would imagine any type of administrative hearing, parties would be able to call witnesses and present evidence. And ultimately, the administrative law judge would issue a recommended decision and order, you know, addressing the underlying charge and whether, he or she believes that the law has been violated. That decision could be appealed by either party to the board. Now, if in the course of investigation I determine that the charge does not even raise a question that warrants a hearing, I could issue a dismissal of the charge. And my dismissal, the executive director dismissal, could also be appealed to by either party to the board.
In short, it could go down a couple of different paths. Either way, you have a central role, a lot on your shoulders there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I always describe my role is sort of the gatekeeper. Again, I'm not necessarily going to address the underlying issue in an unfair labor practice charge, but I'm going to be the gatekeeper to determine whether the charge itself raises a question that warrants further hearing or warrants a hearing.
Sounds like it could take a while. How long does an investigation typically take, and then how long does it take for you to make a decision? And if it does get to the board,
sure,
how long does that take?
Sure. Yeah, and I hesitate to answer that question because every case is so different and there's no statutory time frame for the investigation. But obviously we will move as quickly as possible while still, you know, ensuring that each side has adequate opportunity to present us, you know, any information that they want to present us during the investigation.
Is it fair to say months more so than weeks then?
It is possible. It is possible. It really kind of just depends on the complexity of the case and how quickly the parties give us their information, you know, and how quickly we're able to put it all together. But, you know, there are times where it could be as little as a month, and there are times where it could be more than that. So it's hard to predict that in any given case.
Malinsky recognizes this case is attracting a lot of attention. So many people, tens of thousands, are affected, and the state budget. But she says the Illinois State Labor Relations Board will handle this one the same as it has every other case. I'm Amanda Vinicky.